Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a packed Monday. Charles Barkley an hour from now. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. An hour from now, Colin Wright, Colin Wrong. And slightly more than an hour from now, the great Charles Barkley will be joining us to talk about The Last Dance, of which he was one of the primary focuses of last night. I thought it was just episode 5 was fantastic. I think we forget how good those Phoenix Suns teams were. I thought they were much more entertaining than the very, very good Utah Jazz teams for years. Also today, George Carl, Jane Slater, Doug Gottlieb, and Joy Taylor is joining me in a Monday. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. They get better every week.
I know. Or do I care more every week? I don't know. I love
it.
No,
I think they get better because they're getting deeper into the Jordan that we really remember. Remember last week we were talking about, are they going to get into the gambling stuff?
And they did.
They did.
Yeah. So let me start with this. Cowboys got Andy Dalton. Let's spend about 5 minutes on that. Andy Dalton, who's solid. I don't think he's significantly better or worse than Dak Prescott, is now a Cowboy quarterback. He is a backup quarterback. But I think what's happening is Dak's agents are playing. Todd France is playing a game of chicken, and Jerry Jones isn't budging. And he said, all right, we've made you two offers, Dak. $31 million franchise for a year. You can make a lot of money. Dallas Cowboy quarterback, you're not getting those commercials nationally without it. No state tax, $31 million, here it is. Or the 4-year deal reportedly offered by the Cowboys, which is good, very good for Dak's ability. And they've said no. And so they're like, all right, we'll get somebody that's comparable to you. Dan Orlovsky, a former NFLer, was on Twitter this weekend. He works for the other place. And he said first 4 years when Andy Dalton played are the same as the first 4 years Dak played, and he's not wrong. It should be noted, those were the best offensive lines Andy Dalton had in his career. Andrew Whitworth was protecting his backside. When Andy had good offensive lines, his numbers looked like Dak. What do the Cowboys have? A way above average offensive line, and similarly to Dalton in Cincinnati early, pretty darn good weapons. This is a game of chicken. And again, remember this, is that in baseball, there's no salary cap. So you can pay people what you think they deserved, some of it off what they've already done. But in salary cap leagues, it's different. You pay people on what you project going forward. And Dak Prescott, you can look at the numbers. We'll put them up on FS1. Dak Prescott was bad last year against New England, bad against Philadelphia, bad against playoff teams. So if you're going to pay him in baseball, you don't have salary cap restrictions. You can pay a guy on what you think he could do, and you know what? Here's what he did for us. Can't do that in football. Very difficult to do that in basketball, or you end up in salary cap hell like the New York Knicks are perpetually in. They pay people off what they've done, not what they're going to do. And so I look at this as a game of chicken. Don't kid yourself. Mike McCarthy, head coach formerly of Green Bay and now of Dallas. So Mike McCarthy, when you wake up with a supermodel for all those years, Favre and Aaron Rodgers, and then after a while you wake up with just a model, Dak, you remember when he signed with the Cowboys and how long it took for him to even call Dak? This is a coach who has worked with the best of the best. Unique Aaron Rodgers arm. Unique transformational Favre talent. Now he's got Dak. They didn't reach out to him. His fingerprints are all over this baby. Let's bring in Andy Dalton. Looks about the same level of talent. I honestly think athletically Andy Dalton and Dak aren't special. Arm, they're not special. They're good. Leadership qualities, durable. Dak's a little better athlete. Dalton, I could argue, may have a slightly better arm. I'm not sure. You could ask a scout on that. But it feels like a game of chicken to me. It feels like Dallas has made two legitimate offers. I also think you get into this. Colin, Dak is a winner. If I said, what's Dak's greatest strength? He's a winner. Well, Trubisky using that is a winner. 19-10. Mark Sanchez, first 2 years in the league, was a winner. Tim Tebow was a winner. You have to have discretion beyond he's a winner. If you think Dak's great because he's a winner and you're defending Cam Newton doesn't win enough. You got to have discretion above he's a winner. You know, coaches like Andy Reid moved off Alex Smith. They don't win a Super Bowl if Andy Reid doesn't make that move. Alex Smith was a winner. The Kansas City Chiefs won a Super Bowl because Andy Reid moved off a winner. But the very best GMs, the best scouts, the best head coaches, you have to have discretion. Is he winning because he's pulling the team or the team is pulling him? And in Dak's case, I think we know the answer. So the Last Dance was last night. And there was a lot of different elements. They went in on the gambling. They also went in on Michael Jordan being apolitical. And they told the story about, in where Michael grew up. Jesse Helms had a regrettable history. And there was an African-American candidate running. And Michael did not go out and endorse him. Now, Michael did acknowledge that he was willing to donate, or his mom was, to the campaign. But he didn't want to go out and actively endorse him. And this is the interesting thing about this. Why do we make athletes be politicians? Now, I'm not one of these people that believes stay in your lane. I'm not saying that. I think you can go in any lane you want. But you don't have to stay in your lane. But you sure as hell have the right to pick your lane. You don't have to stay in anybody's lane. But I can pick my lane, can I? I also think it's really easy for average guys to have courage politically. Average football players, average basketball players. You're average. You're replaceable. You got nothing to lose, bruh. Michael was representing Nike and McDonald's. He was the face of the NBA. It is easy for the garage band to lament corporate America. But what if you're the Eagles in your prime, or Jay-Z in your prime, or U2 in your prime, and you're grossing $175 million, and you're dealing with corporate entities? Michael was not just representing Michael. He was representing shoe brands, Nike, McDonald's, the league, the Bulls. He mattered more. So, yes, you have to consider that. Most people who are representing things beyond themselves. Listen, I've had stuff written in my contract where I can't give political either activism or donations. I can't represent an ammunition company. I mean, I'm a sportscaster. Michael Jordan ran the NBA. And so the other part of this, though, is why do we force... Why did Tiger Woods get heat for certain things not being political? Phil Mickelson doesn't. We pick and choose. And I just think it's incredibly unfair to demand certain athletes have to choose a lane. I am not a stay-in-your-lane guy. But don't you have a right to choose the lane? And Michael Jordan commented on that, about not jumping in to politics at that point in his life.
I do commend Muhammad Ali for standing up for what he believed in. But I never thought of myself as an activist. I thought of myself as a basketball player. I wasn't a politician when I was playing my sport. You know, I was focused on my craft. Was that selfish? Probably. But that was my energy. That's where my energy was.
Outside of LeBron, how many NBA players are politically active? Let's start with almost none. A handful. Most of the older smart guy like Chris Paul's into it, kind of. But the reality is Steve Kerr, yes, his dad was a diplomat. Greg Popovich, in his 70s, different generation, was in the military. Why does Damian Lillard have to be great at anything other Damian Lillard wants to be great at? He's great at the hip-hop thing and he's great at basketball. Good for him. And the other thing I find refreshing about Michael Jordan, he hasn't apologized for any of his actions. He hated Isaiah, and he's sticking to it. And he gambled a little, and he's not apologizing. and he's not politically active, and he's not walking it back. Everybody now is terrified, terrified of any pushback. And Michael's like, no, that's who I am. That's the lane I chose, and that one I didn't choose, and I'm not walking it back. You know, it was funny this weekend. I was talking to, had the great fortune to talk to a CEO. She's really talented. And we were talking about people in our business that have flourished. And she says, this CEO said, you know, the key to it really is have an opinion and go all the way with it. And be able to handle mean people on Twitter. That's Michael. I find it incredibly refreshing that he's not going to apologize on his political inactivism. He's not apologizing for hating Isaiah. He's not apologizing for gambling. Why should he? All lanes he chose.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
There was a revelation. I tweeted about it last night. Michael Jordan grew up. Converse could have had Michael Jordan, but they're like, nah, we got Larry Bird and stuff. No, thanks. And then Adidas could have had Michael Jordan because Michael Jordan loved Adidas. And they both passed. And they probably cost themselves, I'm guessing here, $50 to $75 billion. Michael Jordan, just a couple of years ago, made $148 million on shoes at Nike. And that's a couple of years ago. So how much are the shoes making if Michael's making $150 million? The shoes are probably making close to a billion or more. He's not making 50% of the profits. And my point is, this is a great message. And it's a message. I'm when my daughter wakes up this morning, I think she's sleeping in today. She's doing a bunch of homework and finals and stuff. I'm going to text her this. This is why being relentless matters. Michael Jordan was rejected. He was rejected by two shoe companies. You know, you're not Larry Bird. Handsome Michael Jordan with all this grace. Nah, not really. I love Adidas. According to the special, they were just too dysfunctional. So he didn't want to go to Nike. And his mom and dad, who, by the way, Michael's mom and dad look great in this thing. They look like parents matter. Like, his mom, rock solid. His dad, rock solid. They're like, you're getting on that plane, and you're going to go to Nike. But the truth is, most people quit with rejection. And it's a great message. The willful and the relentless do not quit. And everybody faces rejection. I mean, think about this. Michael Jordan, this has been an illustration to me, this entire documentary. There is so much incompetence. There is so many, like, dysfunction, even within great organizations. Jerry Krause got rid of the best player, the best duo, the best team, and the best coach. What? He fought the Bulls the entire way. And I'm not saying Jerry Krause didn't make a lot of smart moves, but good God, he was so insecure, the short, chubby kid, the short, chubby adult, he just couldn't get out of his own way. He basically ran off the best basketball coach in the history of the sport, and the best player said, I'm not going to play without the best coach. And he blew it up. He blew it up. They were still the best team in the East. Give me a break on the New York Knicks. Nobody could shoot. If John Starks is your first or second best player, you're not going to win championships. Nice player. He should be the fifth best player on a championship team. So when I watched this, I thought it shows you why relentlessness and willfulness are wildly underappreciated. Everybody faces roadblocks. People are going to doubt your talent if you're gifted. I mean, if you go back and look at the history, I remember the show American Idol, which, I mean, I think it's fair to say, Joy, for a decade, outside of football on television, it was the biggest show for a decade. Every network passed on it. Every network passed on it until Fox said, you know, this, we gave this thing a run, ran TV for a decade. Seinfeld show turned down. Seinfeld show, even the public didn't like it for a year. Like, nobody watched it. Letterman's morning show didn't work. But it's the willfulness, the people that use rejection and obstacles as jet fuel and just don't quit. Because when you're watching the best basketball, I mean, Michael was, he came from the best program. He had the best college coach. He was great looking. He had great parents. He was unbelievably great. And shoe companies are like, nah, really. What? That'd be like Beyonce walking into a record company and they're like, no, I don't think she's pretty or has any talent. What? Well, we've got Glenn Campbell here cutting some LPs. I'm like, Converse? Are you crazy?
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right, it's time for, as we do every Monday at this time, Colin Right, Colin Wrong. Here we go.
Where Colin was right.
Didn't buy into Mitch Trubisky day one. And I didn't buy into all the public support by the Bears front office for Mitch Trubisky. And what do you know? The Bears declined to pick up his fifth-year option. Listen, Ryan Pace, the general manager, whiffed badly, has to own it. And Matt Nagy, a brilliant young head coach, has had to pick up the pieces for this. Mitch Trubisky's got an 86 passer rating. I didn't like when he got picked. I've never bought into all this nonsensical public support. And the Bears now acknowledging, we're not going to build around him going forward.
Where Colin was wrong.
Well, Joe Burrow has been picked as the favorite to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. It's not a bet I would make. Fox Bet's got the over-under for Cincinnati on 5.5 wins. So let's say he wins 5 games. That's the Offensive Rookie of the Year. Now, it is possible. Kyler Murray just did that. But I think he's viewed as a savior. I think this division is the best division in football defensively with Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland. I think he's going to be overwhelmed. I'm not saying he's a bust, but I don't see him flourishing. And by the way, he's going to have to start day one. Tua's not. And he's also no OTAs. Maybe a truncated camp. Everything's working against Joe Burrow. He's good enough, I think, to withstand it, but I don't think he'll flourish in these times.
Where Colin was right.
Bob McGinn, 35-year, 40-year Green Bay Packer reporter, now with The Athletic, last week said the Packers chose a quarterback due to Aaron Rodgers' attitude. They want to tell Aaron, we run this place. Why am I right? Because I think I was one of the first voices, certainly nationally, to say, dude, Darren's a lot of work. I mean, you don't have Drew Brees' family taking shots at him, brother taking shots at him, teammates taking. You don't see that with any other quarterback. There was also a quote last week that Aaron is Jay Cutler with a ring. Several years ago, I was told by a coach in the NFL, Mike McCarthy had told somebody, he's Jay Cutler with talent. The bottom line with Aaron Rodgers, he's gifted but difficult. Bob McGinn acknowledging it.
Where Colin was wrong.
Andrew Berry is the new Browns GM. He doubled down saying, OBJ, long-term Cleveland Brown plans. I don't think it's the best fit. I think OBJ and Baker is problematic. I think you're asking Baker Mayfield to produce big numbers when Baker's now got two good tight ends, two good running backs, two good receivers. I think it's actually unfair to Baker Mayfield, who I've been critical of. But they think it's going to work. I don't think it's an ideal fit, but Andrew Berry, once again, is doubling down. We're into OBJ. He's going nowhere.
Where Colin was right.
There's been a lot of people, journalists, saying that LeBron James would rather shut this season down. LeBron came out last week and said, I definitely want to play. Don't believe anything you hear. Everybody I talk to wants to play. And according to another story, he is all in on Disney World. I don't get this. Day one on this, I don't get it. The Lakers are the second oldest roster, I believe, in the NBA. There's going to be no help in free agency. It's a bad free agent class. There's going to be no help in this draft. And frankly, the cap's going to go down. The Lakers don't want to blow through the cap and get the luxury tax penalty. I don't understand any argument that LeBron James wants to shut it down. I would argue that post-virus, the people who will benefit in this will be veteran players who have homes and workout facilities and are in the best shape. You see what Russell Wilson's doing with this virus. That's not what Sam Darnold perhaps is doing with this virus. So I don't get the arguments that LeBron doesn't want a season. I think he wants it more than anybody.
Where Colin was right.
I've said, joy is my witness. I don't buy into Jared Stidham necessarily, but I think New England's in a total reboot. And Andy Dalton? Nope. Teddy Bridgewater? Nope. Cam? Nope. This is all playing into what I believe is true. They let go of their kicker, their best defensive playmaking linebackers. They have decided we're going to keep Stephon Gilmore and mostly let talented guys go. They didn't address in a dynamic draft. They didn't address it. They're going to go with Jarrett Stidham. And what they're telling you is we're going to reboot. We're going to see how this works. And gosh darn it, we went 6-10. We've got the number 9 pick and a bunch of draft picks to move up in cap space. I've never thought this year, I've never taken the report seriously on, you know, on the Cam Newtons and the Jameis Winstons going to New England. I think they're in reboot mode, and once again, they passed on Andy Dalton.
Where Colin was wrong.
Three of the top 15 high school stars are now going to the G League. Zion showed kids how the college basketball platform works. I think the NBA is making a mistake. I think they're doing what baseball does, putting kids in an anonymous minor league system. Then they go off to teams I don't watch, and they never make the postseason for years and years. I think the strength of the NFL is the college football marketing platform. And I'm wrong on this. The NBA sees no value whatsoever for college basketball. And increasingly, despite what Zion did, college high school stars see very little value in college basketball. For 6 months, I don't get it. I mean, I understand if you have no interest in going to college. I'm not saying you can't do it, but it looks like there's a momentum happening where college basketball going forward has no value to top players. I'm wrong, and I think it's a mistake.
Where Colin was right.
Cam Newton has no job still. Andy Dalton out of work for a day. Celebrity injuries doesn't win enough. And mechanically, not the same player. I never bought into this was a dynamic job market for Cam Newton. Nobody wants a celebrity backup. And let's be honest, all my sources through the years have said he's distracted and there's a lot of drama that doesn't get out. Ron Rivera keeps it squelched, but I never believed there was a dynamic job market for Cam Newton. I believe Cam will eventually, after an injury, find a job. But the market for Cam, I've always believed, is much smaller than Twitter thinks.
Where Colin was right.
Finally, the NFL has always been the league. They're like a movie studio. They put all their platforms, they put all their events in the time of year that will best serve consumption. So college football last week paused on playing, and what did the NFL do? We'll play Saturday. We'll put games Saturday, because that's what the NFL does. It is why I believe they're the most nimble league. They're the antithesis of baseball, and it's something I have given the NFL a ton of credit for. They look at their schedule. They move free agency. They move the combine. They'll move their schedule. They'll change their rules. The minute college football pauses on their season, the NFL came out last week and said, yeah, we'll play Saturday too. This is their strength, evolving, adapting, nimble. And they did it again last week.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I've been talking about kind of defending Michael on his gambling, and my takeaway is if you like to have a glass of wine every few nights with your wife, as long as it doesn't affect your marriage, your job, your liver, who am I to call you an alcoholic? And if you're gambling and you like to gamble on the horses or whatever, it doesn't affect your job, your marriage, your career, your friendships, or your bank account. Well, who the hell am I to call you? You have a problem gambling. To me, the result will tell me how bad your problem is. But maybe I'm wrong. I'm not an expert on this stuff. That's just my opinion. Charles Barkley, the Hall of Famer, is joining us. I mean, you've probably gambled a few times in your day. Michael gambled. I mean, how do you, when you hear all these stories about Michael and gambling and the media saying, do you have a problem, does it bother you, the coverage of the media asking those questions?
Well, number one, I love to gamble, so I'm probably biased. But listen, Michael liked to gamble. You know, Colin, one thing. Number one, you're doing a great job this morning just discussing this stuff. I've never been in a casino by myself, to be honest with you, Colin. So clearly there's other people who like to gamble.
That is funny.
You know, I always tell people, you know, obviously I've told people I love to drink. I've never been in a bar by myself. Other people have been in there. So I like to drink. I like to gamble. I know Michael likes to drink and he likes to gamble. And obviously, you know, the only thing that's crazy, I've been around him. The numbers he gambles with, I can't afford those numbers.
Right.
So I think that's what made some people disconcerting.
Yeah. You know, it's pretty well documented. You guys at one point had a friendship. It's not as great now or whatever. And you're a very – the thing about you, Charles, you're very vulnerable on the air. You're very brutally honest. And it's at one point I saw a quote where you said, it hurts. And I thought, yeah, I don't like it either. I don't like two people I love not getting along. Today, this morning, does it still bother you? Are you still hurt?
Yeah, of course, of course. A guy was a great, great friend, like a brother. And we obviously, I said some things that, number one, I don't regret saying it. I got to do my job.
Right.
And that sucks. It plain out sucks. But, you know, Colin, you've been in this business. You're a legend in this business. I'm not just saying this because I'm on your show. Like, you probably had to say some things about people you like.
Yes.
And it sucks.
Yes.
And I tell people, wait, I don't go on the air every week saying, hey, I'm going to bash this guy or this guy. But sometimes you have to say some things, and it sucks. Because, like I say, I love all these NBA players. But you have to do your job. And right. I know you've been in this thing 100 years. You probably had to criticize guys you like, guys you've been out to drink with, guys you play golf with or whatever. And it sucks, but you got to do your job.
Oh, yeah. Tyronn Lue called me last year and yelled at me, and it was great. But he wanted, and I've always said, like, I'll Richie Incognito, Terrell Owens. It isn't fun. But I also think you and I have a responsibility to be honest, and honesty's hard, right?
You know, it's so funny. You're talking about all the political stuff. You know, and let's talk about honesty for a second. People want you to be honest, but they only want you to be honest when they agree with you.
Thank you.
That's it. That's the one thing that sucks about honesty. People are like, well, you know, Charles is honest. Like, yeah, when the people agree with you, and you're talking about the political stuff, can you imagine if a player – not even have to, because I remember like a year ago, they found a Donald Trump hat in Tom Brady's locker.
Yeah.
And America like lost their damn mind. I'm like, wait a minute, he can wear whatever hat he wants to. He can vote for who he wants to. But can you imagine if, not? I don't want to use LeBron, that's too easy.
Yeah.
Let's say Steph Curry, who's a great, great person and player, came out and said he was going to vote for Trump. Can you imagine the backlash that he would take? I mean, the media, the fans, they would, a certain percentage would go crazy. Like, some of them would love it, obviously, but a certain percentage would go crazy. So I'm not going to get on Michael. Listen, let me ask you another question, Colin.
Yeah.
Name me one political statement that Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Tom Brady made. Now, Tom Brady's a lot older, but name me one player back in that day who said anything political. Anybody. Magic Johnson, who I love to death, he got more political now with Twitter and things like that, but he never made any political statement back when Michael was in his heyday. Same thing with Bird or me or Karl Malone. Nobody made social statements back then.
You know, it's funny you say that, Charles. And this is where I don't think I should have strong opinions. As an African American, you have endured things I have not. So have you ever felt a responsibility to address certain things? You know, Doug Gottlieb came on and said, you know, if it's anti-Semitic, I'm Jewish, it's hurtful, and I'm going to address it. So have you ever, African American male, do you feel a responsibility sometimes to address things that I wouldn't feel?
Yes, And I feel like I've done a good job talking about it, too, to be honest with you. I think that there's many times I've addressed things that happen for the black community, and I have no problem doing that. I think it's important and significant. But, like, you have to pick and choose because you would be busy all the time.
Yeah.
And you would be busy all the time. Because, listen, let me tell you something. Being black is stressful because there's something that happens every week, every month, that, like, you talk about racial injustice all the time. So I think you have to be selective because fans don't turn on basketball, football, baseball to hear you talk about social issues all the time.
Right.
That's actually the fine line you have to walk.
Yeah.
Like I say, I think you have to be very selective on what you talk about because there's actually something that could happen every single day.
Yeah, no, I pick and choose. I mean, I'm not a Trump fan, but I also work for Fox, so I do my jabs occasionally. But no, I think people largely tune into me for sports, and I'm comfortable with that. I don't think people look to me for anything else other than that, and I'm comfortable with that. Charles Barkley joining us. So I want to talk about this whole, you know, the Isaiah thing is funny. You get along with virtually everybody. But when I watched the special last night, the documentary, it's not like Michael was the only guy that wasn't a huge fan of Isaiah Thomas. And I think of you as somebody that is gregarious and gets along with everybody. But after last night, I'm thinking, Charles, was it just Michael or Isaiah wasn't a very good, what they call a very good hang?
You know, it's interesting to me. Obviously, that's obviously in my day.
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody say, I mean, obviously, I think the Pistons made a mistake not shaking Michael's hand.
Right.
I think they were 100% wrong. But when I was asked about the Dream Team, Isaiah Thomas' name never came up, ever. Michael, and listen, at that time, me and Michael are great friends. He never mentioned to me privately, like, if he asked you about Isaiah, that never happened. But I'm a big Isaiah Thomas fan. I thought that he got a bad rap last week, to be honest with you, because, you know, Michael called him a name, and he felt like he needed to come out there and defend himself, which is rightfully so. But I Isaiah's always treated me great, and obviously I'm biased. I work with him now.
Yeah.
But I thought that he got a bad rap because if you go back and look at that documentary, Lambeer is the one who started all the crap walking off. And even Isaiah, to his credit, he says, "I wish I had a did that differently."
Yeah.
So I thought he took a beating last week for no reason.
Yeah. You know, as I watch this, you know, you have said before you don't want to be on social media because it's a bunch of trolls and nobodies, and you're not wrong. The one thing I keep coming back to, Jerry Krause was kind of a short, heavy nerd. He just couldn't accept the fact that the players were winning the games. And God, every time I want to give Jerry Krause credit, I watched last night, and I'm like, can you just get out of the way? Have you ever worked for a general manager in your life that you felt was either jealous or needy? I can't believe how needy Jerry Krause is.
Colin, I'm going to have to stop you, man, because I think you're 100% wrong on this.
All right.
First of all, Jerry Krause probably was needy. But I think the guy y'all are letting off the hook is Jerry Reinsdorf. I think this notion that Jerry Krause broke up the Bulls, if you go back and look at it, okay, they let Horace Grant go because they didn't want to pay him.
Right.
He left. Okay, he only played, you know, in episode 1 and 2, everybody talked about how much money that Scotty made. Michael barely made more money than Scotty. And actually, over the career, Scotty made more money basketball-wise than Michael. Michael only made money those last 2 years. Reinsdorf broke up the Bulls for one reason. He didn't want to pay Michael anymore, and it was time to pay Scotty. Listen, Jerry Reinsdorf might have had little man syndrome, but I just think, listen, the notion that he broke up the Bulls, this was all about Reinsdorf not wanting to pay those guys. He never paid anybody but Michael those 2 years, and he paid him $30 million, and he was underpaid those 2 years.
No, I mean, listen, you're right. My producer, John Goulet, this morning said that was his argument, is that Krause is the fall guy for Reinsdorf's tight wallet.
Yes, 100%. And he got he. And I love that in episodes 1 and 2, he has this great suit on. And, like, he's just – not only he throw Jerry Krause onto the bus, he backed over him, like, 10, 15 times. Like, Jerry broke up the Bulls. Jerry broke – Jerry. I'm like, come on, man. If you wanted to pay Scottie Pippen, you got him at a great bargain, but you didn't want to pay him when it was time to pay him. You paid Michael $30 million 2 years to make it even comparable to what Scottie made his entire career. You didn't want to pay Horace Grant. Dennis, they never said how much money Dennis was making. You ever noticed that? Dennis wasn't making any money either. The guy had the greatest, arguably, up there with the Celtics and Lakers. That's the greatest team ever. As long as they were cheap and inexpensive, he got a brand new stadium built.
Yes.
He's the guy. He's the one who's getting off the hook. And listen, Jerry might have had little man syndrome, but Jerry Reinsdorf made a gazillion dollars, got a brand new United Center, and made a million gazillion dollars and didn't want to pay anybody.
Yeah.
I got to tell you an inside story.
All right.
I was actually with Michael. We were in Lake Tahoe when he signed that first $30 million contract. And I've never told anybody this before, actually. And Michael was MFing on the phone. And he comes back we were sitting around playing cards. I was, what's going on, man? He says, Krause just gave me my 30. In fact, it was like I was going to get a root canal to make him pay me fair market value. And he was MFing this dude so bad up and down, like, this dude don't want to pay me, man. And when he finally signed, that was the first $30 million he got. And Michael was pissed, like, this dude don't want to pay anybody. And that's what really happened.
Yeah. No, that's great. I appreciate you sharing that story. For the record, a lot of the dream team, the legendary practice, all this stuff. It was right after a season. You guys didn't, you didn't have to play. The mythology is it was the most fun thing ever. Did you guys all love the Dream Team thing, or was it boring beating Tunisia by 60?
You know, Colin, it's number one, the practice of the part of anything I ever did in my life. The practices were the most intense things I've ever been through, ever, every single day. Because at that time, you had me and Karl Malone, who were the two best power forwards. We were trying to kill each other. You had Patrick and David Robinson. They were the two best centers. They were trying to kill each other. And you saw a little bit. Clyde and Michael hated each other, so they practiced against each other every day. Magic had just lost to the Bulls in the finals, and he was pissed at Scottie for locking him down. So we had these little mano-a-mano things going every day. So that's what made it so crazy and intense. Like, the games were cakewalk. But every day in practice, I'm playing against Karl Malone, David against Patrick, Clyde against Michael, Scottie against Magic. And it was just... what do you call it, pride, ego, whatever. We tried to kill each other every single day. That's why Magic, when you said, I've never been through anything like those practices on the Dream Team. Because, well, like I say, it was all ego, obviously, but we tried to kill each other every day. And it's the most awesome thing that I've ever experienced in my life, to be honest with you.
Well, you're always honest with us, Charles Barkley. What are you doing today, the rest of the day?
I'm doing a lot of radio and TV today because I want to thank everybody for bringing back the memory of the worst experience of my life, losing to the Bulls in 93-94. So I'm on a tour this morning talking about the last dance. But I just want to thank you and every other person on TV and radio for bringing up the worst weekend I ever had in my life to the Bulls.
those were fun teams and great teams. I tell everybody all the time, go Google the Phoenix Suns with Barkley. They were scoring 133 and not shooting threes. You guys were, it was like the Globetrotters. It was literally, you were breaking and smashing offensive record. You were better than the Bulls offensively. I don't think you were as good defensively, but you were a better offensive team than they were.
Well, it's so funny you said it because, they're making a big deal out of this documentary, Colin. I actually think the Bulls with Pippen, Jordan, and Grant, I thought they were better than the Rodman Bulls. No disrespect to Dennis. I got love for Dennis. But I actually think the team that beat us in the finals was better than the one they're making a documentary about. Obviously, Dennis' personality and Michael's last thing. But I thought Michael in his supreme prime – Scottie and Horace Grant was the best defensive team I've ever seen, and I've always said that.
Yeah. Have fun today, buddy. Great talking to you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on, man. Keep up the great work. I'm going to get back to doing absolutely nothing for this sixth straight week.
Legendary broadcaster and Hall of Famer Charles Barkley.